When it comes to art forgers, not many that I can think of have been more prolific than Mark Landis.
46 museums in 20 states with more than 100 pieces that he's offered up to these institutions.
Landis made scores of drawings and paintings of all sorts, from lesser-known artists to Picasso and Walt Disney. But here's the interesting part. He never tried to sell his forgeries. He donated them. And he fooled museums all over the country into accepting his gifts. Until, in 2007, one of them finally looked the gift horse in the mouth. At the Oklahoma City Museum of Art, the registrar got suspicious. And he, a guy named Matthew Leininger, started an investigation that led to Landis's exposure. It's one of the most curious forgery cases in art history. Because Landis never received a penny for his forgeries, he's never been prosecuted. He and the unraveling of his 30-year con are the subject of a fascinating documentary called Art and Craft by the filmmaker Sam Coleman. So, Sam Coleman and Mark Landis, welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks for having us.
So, Mark, watching this documentary, it was so surprising to me both how quickly you work and do these pictures and the incredibly common materials you use. Like, you were buying stuff at Hobby Lobby to forge apparently convincing Picassos. Talk about process and the tools.
Oh, sure. Well, all that really counts is what it looks like, you know. When you go to a museum, you don't put it under one of those giant microscopes.
No, but you expect the museums to.
That they have down in the basement of museums. And I've been in plenty of them.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, when you meet people, you don't x-ray them or anything, right? It's like a magic trick. Let's put it, that's a good, it's like a magic trick.
Right.
Yeah, if it looks convincing.
Except, of course, I never believe that a magician is really performing magic.
Yeah, you're right. That was a bad one.
That's all right. I want to talk about the stuff you use, though. I mean, you're shown using felt-tip pens and putting, like, crappy dime store frames
on them. I like things that are easy, because if there is such a thing as an attention deficit disorder, I've got it, because I've got to get things done really fast. A movie starts on TV, and I like to have it done by the time the movie's over, you know.
Really? So, really, a picture takes you only a couple of few hours?
Yeah, at best.
How did you learn to do it?
Well, I grew up in Europe in the 60s, and Mother and Dad used to like to travel around.
And he was a naval officer, right?
That's right. He worked for NATO. Anyway, we'd, you know, go to museums during the day, and of course, we'd bring back catalogs and things, and then they liked to go out, and I'd be left alone in a hotel room, and they didn't have TVs in the hotel rooms yet, but I did have the catalogs to go through, and like all kids, you know, you draw pictures, and I started copying pictures out of the catalogs.
So once you decided, hey, I'm going to do these and give them away to museums, how did you and how do you decide what works to forge?
Oh, okay. Well, to begin with, it was an impulse way back in 85 or 86. And everybody was just so nice and treated me with respect and deference and friendship. Things I was—
Because they thought you were rich and generous.
Yeah, things I was very unused to. Actually not used to at all. And I got addicted to it. And to answer the second part of your question, okay, before I subscribed to the internet and everything, I had to rely on the museum directory at the library. The main thing is you try and find out a little bit about the museum and what they collect, because you have to give them something they want, you know, something that they specifically collect.
And then once you decide, okay, that this is the kind of thing they want, do you say, oh, I love this picture, or is it all about making the—
No, you have to find some—well, preferably find something that you like doing, but the main thing is something that they will want, you know.
Right. And so for 20 years as you did this, nobody ever said, wait, we got to check this out, or I'm not sure.
Well, no, they did. But what I cared about was that they didn't get around to doing it until I was long gone.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess if they ever were suspicious, they would probably keep it quiet since it's they didn't pay anything for it.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they did and sometimes they didn't. I mean, I do have a collection of stiff letters. But
what does stiff letters mean?
Oh, just, you know, the usual thing. Thank you very much for your interest in our museum, we have decided to deaccession such and such and remove it from our permanent collection. You know, that sort of, that's what I mean, sincerely. That's a stiff letter.
Sam, when you tracked Mark down in Mississippi and told him you were working on this documentary, as I understand it, he immediately said he spilled the beans, right? And showed you how he does it.
Well, it wasn't immediate. Mark spent some time vetting us on the phone. But you're right. It's true. When we met Mark with camera in tow, he was incredibly forthcoming for a guy in his position. He wanted to tell us everything, and he let us film him making the copies and eventually, pretty soon thereafter, giving them away.
And was that, Mark, because you thought, okay, this has gone on long enough. This is a new fun piece of this adventure?
No. Actually, it's like most things. There's always a simple answer. I'm a lonely old shut-in, and I really appreciated
attention.
Having some chic young filmmakers from New York City come to spend some time with me and become friends to me.
Sam, the film also follows Matthew Leininger, who is the registrar, was the registrar at the Oklahoma City Museum of Art, who first got suspicious about Mark's donations. The New York Times describes Matt Leininger as the Javert to Mark's Jean Valjean, the police inspector and thief from Les Miserables. I definitely see the Javert in Leininger, but since Mark is a career deceiver, I mean, isn't he more like Dostoevsky character or something? I mean, because he's not an innocent.
No, Mark's not an innocent. I think he will eventually take responsibility for what he's done in conversation. But, you know, I do think what is remarkable about Mark and what made his story so intriguing to us is that I don't think there was malice in his actions. You know, when we first met him, he was genuinely upset to hear that he had caused people some anguish.
So why do you think Matt Leininger picked up on this thing that all these dozens of experts for years and years had not?
Well, Mark is remarkable for many, many reasons. One of them is that as a forger, he copies a huge range of things. He's made copies from 15th century icons all the way to Picasso and Walt Disney and everything in between. That's unusual for people who make copies. The other thing that is unusual that Mark did, which also I think resulted in Matt finding him out, is that he made multiple copies of the same work and gave them to the different places across the country. And by the time the internet age came about, Matt, when he received one of the gifts, looked it up and found out, hey, that's in a couple other institutions. There's something wrong here.
And because he didn't sell them, because he donated them, that's explains why he's here rather than in jail, I guess.
That's right. Mark walks free.
And when you were doing this, were you conscious of the legal issues and, oh, if I just give them away, I'll never get in trouble?
I guess I just didn't really think about it much.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
I mean, I'd have known that if I was selling, because I've seen enough
right.
TV. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, I didn't think I'd get into trouble. No,
right.
I thought they'd just get mad and
right.
send stiff letters. And I'd be long gone by the time
yeah.
they got mad, so,
yeah.
you know.
And so you concocted all these false identities as the philanthropist in these various museums, but you also donated works using your own name.
Oh, yeah, I started out doing that, yeah. But then when I thought gossip was getting around, because you know what they say about things being this business is a small world. Everybody knows everybody in this business. So I was afraid gossip was getting around.
Uh-huh.
So I thought I had better start using different aliases and things.
We see you in the film going to see mental health professionals and talking about your various diagnoses for schizophrenia and other things. Do you ever think of this adventure, these forgeries as some symptom of illness or not?
I never thought of it in that way, no. And I don't even know if any of that stuff's wrong with me.
At what point, Sam, in the making of the film, did you become aware of this history of quote-unquote mental illness, and did that change the way you were thinking about Mark and his story?
Definitely, many of those things. So we were introduced to the story actually through Matt Leininger. When the Times wrote the piece that inspired Jennifer to contact me and to go out and try and make this film, they had not talked to Mark yet. They described him as at large, sort of trumping up the dramatic aspects of him being this big bad guy out there in the world. And by the time we tracked down Matt, Matt, you know, was speculating a lot about there had been rumors, you know, is Mark ill? Is he, you know, is he dangerous? You know, there was like a lot of like fear about that. And of course, when we got to meet Mark, none of that was really accurate. But we did get Mark to talk about his family, his past, and also his mental illness. And that certainly did change what we thought we had. You know, the film sort of starts off as this art caper, a cat and mouse chase. And then it becomes something much broader, I think, once we learn who Mark is.
So a couple of years ago, there was a show of your work in Cincinnati, organized by the University of Cincinnati and by Matt Leininger, who busted you, called Faux Real. Now there's this big documentary that we're talking about here. This has all panned out pretty well for you, hasn't it?
Yeah. Door of opportunity opens both ways. Because I remember when, you know, I first found out I was in trouble, I was pretty down because I was thinking, gee, what am I going to do? You know, I can't just sit around in my room watching TV the rest of my life, you know? I mean...
Yeah. So this must be fun.
Now? Yeah. Well, yes, so far, yeah.
Are you still making pictures?
Yeah. People have been letting me do their grandchildren and children, and when they go on a vacation, like to Europe, they bring back things and they want paintings of. And then, you know, the churches in Laurel have had me do things for benefit auctions, which gives you a boost, you know, to your self-esteem.
Right.
Yeah.
Still doing forgeries, though?
Oh, no.
No?
No, not unless somebody asks me to.
Right. Yeah. You're not deceiving anyone?
No, not really.
Or so you claim.
Not really.
Not really?
No more than anybody else.
Well, Mark, it has been a pleasure talking to you, and good luck with how you spend this incredibly active retirement.
Thank you for everything.
And Sam Coleman, thank you as well.
Thanks for having us.
Art and Craft is the documentary about Mark Landis, and if you'd like to see some of his forgeries, go to studio360.org.